I wanted to use this as an opportunity to discuss just some basic questions. You know, with the chat, thank you to Jillian and Malka for putting this together. I know there was a lot of pressure on me to start this halacha chat. I know there's a lot of... I was holding back for a while. There's a women's halacha chat in the WhatsApp chat. If you have it, you could certainly join in. If you have it, and there's a men's one. The men's one certainly keeps me very busy, so we made a women's one, which is a little more limited, and I hope no one's offended. I know there was some pushback about that as well, to go through a certain filter system, just to give myself some space during the day. So I figured I'd use it as an opportunity, because my wife said she bumped into someone the other day, and she said she really enjoys the chat, because she feels like she hadn't learned anything in the past 20 years since she went to seminary. So she's like being reminded of all the halacha that she once learned years ago to bring it relevance to her life. So I want to discuss now focusing on Shalach Manos. But I want to, along the way, bring up other topics that we might have to deal with and be very relevant, whether it be Hilchos Shabbos, Tefilas Kelim, Tzedakah. These are all types of questions that constantly come up. So this uses really as a springboard to discuss topics that are very much involved in our everyday life. So let's discuss the obligation of Shalach Manos. Now, Shalach Manos is, of course, very challenging for women. You know, everything is challenging for all of us, but it's very, very hectic. There's a lot of pressure involved. We're very makbid on keeping halacha. So when the Shulchan Aruch tells us that when you're supposed to give a lot of Shalach Manos, hareza meshubach, it's very praiseworthy. The more you give, the merrier. So we want to go all out and give as many Shalach Manos as we possibly can. So that puts a lot of pressure on the women getting everything together. Now, that's on top of the fact we want to make it look very pretty, right? There's a mitzvah of hiddur mitzvah. And when a man gets his dal minim, he gets his esog and his lulav, he's looking at it so carefully. You know, I always make fun of the men. When it comes to folding a tablecloth, they have no idea what they're doing. When it comes to folding their talus, they know exactly what they're doing. So when it comes to mitzvahs, we know what we're doing. When it comes to mitzvahs, we like to be very particular and take great care to it. When it comes to things, helping around the house, men seem to, not take care of. So women, when it comes to hiddur mitzvah, that's the most important thing. It has to look pretty. It has to fit into a theme. It has to fit into a poem. Everything has to match properly. And now the big question is, does it have to match the costume? So when you pick out the costumes, so let's say, we're discussing being bowling people. Anyway, so now you have to get a long fruit by the foot to be the lane, and jelly bellies to be the pins, and some type of candy balls to be the pole, the bowling balls. Everything has to fit in. So now that's all added pressure to what costume should you be. So in our family, we try to pick the costumes right after Halloween because everything's cheap then. But the kids don't know what they want to be yet. So we have many meetings throughout the year from Halloween until now, what we're going to be. Before it's 2 days before we could order from Amazon. So this year, the kids decided, I can't say what we decided to be yet, it's a surprise, but whatever we decided to be, we had to sign contracts this year. My kids made me sign on a piece of paper what we're going to be so no one could change. So, well, we almost changed actually the other day because we couldn't find the costumes that they wanted. So it's very, very challenging. The costumes, the Shalach Manos, the themes, the colors. Now, that's all on top of the fact that Pesach is just a few weeks afterwards. So now you get all this candy, and you get all the chametz, and now you have to get rid of that chametz. I gave a shiur to the men this past Sunday. Are you allowed to take your kids' Shalach Manos away and give them to tzedakah? Are you allowed to do that? Because there's so much, and we don't want them getting more cavities, and we want to get rid of it before Pesach. So can you take them away or not? And the truth is you're not allowed to take them away from the kids because they own it. It's theirs. So in our family, what we do is we have a big draft, draft pick. What does that mean? So I think the kids get the pick. You correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think they get, I don't really know what goes on in my house. But we have categories? Okay.
Nash, Mizonos, bags.
Okay, drinks maybe. So everyone gets to pick out whatever categories, and this goes around from Bat Sheva down to Yisrael Meir. Razi doesn't get the pick just yet. And then whatever's left, everyone agrees it all goes to tzedakah. But they're all in agreement. They all agree to this. Just to take them away wouldn't be allowed, so we didn't really give them a choice. But they agree to take whatever they take, and whatever's left over we give to tzedakah. So now, what about our children? Now, we're busy worrying about our Shalach Manos, how to make it look fancy and fit into the theme. But our kids also have to send Shalach Manos, so we can't forget about the mitzvah of chinuch. Now, the real big decisions on Purim Day is, should you stay home Or should you go around sending shalach manos? Now, if you stay home, so that's like a little snobby sometimes, right? If I'm staying home, you come visit me. The best decision we made was becoming a rabbi. Because I get to stay home because I don't want to miss any congregants. So that's my excuse. I need to stay home. I don't want to miss anybody. So, but then if you go out, then you're going to miss someone who comes to visit you. So what do? So maybe you should split up. One stays home, one goes out. But then you miss the whole theme. Because if you're like, I don't know, Alvin, Simon, Theodore, so you're missing Theodore. You don't have the whole theme together. Or like you're the seven dwarfs, so you're missing three of the dwarfs. It doesn't work out with the theme. So there's a lot of decisions to be made, and there's a lot of pressure on preparing for Purim and Shalach Manos. It reminds me of a very high-pressured story we just had a couple weeks ago. We went to Florida. So when I plan our trips, everything is planned to the T, and I always give like 10, 15 minutes of buffer, just in case something bad goes wrong. So we're leaving on Monday, getting ready to go to the airport. We're in Florida. We're leaving from Fort Lauderdale area down to Miami. So we figured on the way, we'll stop, get some lunch, we'll eat, and then we'll pick up dinner also from that same place. So we went to a bagel store in Fort Lauderdale area, and it was an overcast, which means no one was outside. Everyone's inside the restaurant. So now, inside a restaurant during winter break in Florida, that means you're waiting 3 hours for the food. So we thought maybe we could find some other place to go that might be a little quicker. So we went to 20 minutes to another store, same deal. So let's go down to Miami. We're going to the airport anyway. So we went down to Miami Beach to 41st Street. And we went to a bagel store, lined out the door. Said, no, we found Carl's and Gabby's. Who's having fleishiks in the afternoon for lunch? So my wife goes in, Randy goes in with the kids. And I'm looking for parking because parking is crazy there. And then I got a beautiful spot right in back of Carl's and Gabby's. And it was taking like 30 minutes to sit down in Carl's and Gabby's, just to sit down, and no one was in there. So we walked to a place called Kastner's, the grocery store. And we bought some food for lunch, we bought some dinner, and then as we're coming back, my car, the rent car, is being towed. So what's going on here? I need to get to the airport. You can't tow my car now. So they're towing my car. I said, you talk to that guy. He said, the tow man, whatever, the tow truck guy. He says, go talk to him. So this big guy comes out, and he says, you can't park here. I said, why not? I went to Kastner's. He said, no, I saw you walk with a kid across the street. I said, I didn't walk across the street. He said, yeah, I saw you. Don't lie to me. I said, I didn't cross the street. He said, you can't park unless you're going to Kastner's. He said, look, I've got a bag here and a receipt. This is Kastner's. So you're lying to me. So why didn't you go through the back? He said, I didn't know there was a back. I went to the front. I didn't know there was a back. I'll let you off this one time. What do you mean? I didn't do anything wrong. Okay, $300, all right? You want to? Okay, I'll just get, okay, you're right. Just let me go. And he let me off the hook, and we took the car, and we made it to the airport just in time. So that's a high-pressured situation. Imagine the car was towed. What would we have done? The rent a car to get to the airport, pay for it, it would have been a mess. So this is what I'm feeling that women feel like on Shalach Manos and Purim. Is this somewhat correct? Okay, somewhat, okay. Should I share the other story with the car in Chicago? Yeah? Okay, fine. Okay, you've heard this before. Okay, so let's discuss. Maybe at the end I'll share it with you if there's some time for it. So in the end of the day, there's a high-pressure situation. There's a lot of effort and stress that goes into preparing for Shalach Manos. So let's talk about what exactly is the mitzvah. What is our obligation? How do we fulfill the mitzvah? And how far should we go in making it so nice and fancy and making everyone happy? So firstly, are women chayv in the mitzvah of Shalach Manos? That's a basic question. And the Gemara tells us in Shulchan Aruch Paskins that women are chayv in Shalach Manos because it says, Af hein hayu be'osu hanes, that women were also involved in the miracle, that Esther Malka was the one who was orchestrating the entire nes, and therefore they are just as obligated as men are obligated. So that can be accomplished. Either the women could send on their own, or they could send as a family, but the basic obligation is that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Shalach Manos. Now, it should be noted that the Rama writes, a woman should not send to a man should not send to a woman, the gender same, send to the same genders, not to the opposite genders. If they're family sending, so then they can send to family. So we know that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Shalach Manos. So how much do you have to send? At what point do you fulfill the mitzvah? So the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, based on the Pasuk tells us in Megillas Esther that U'mishloach manos ish l'reyehu, a lot of us learned this when we were younger. Mishloach manos is two, and ish l'reyehu, or isha l'reyeha, so a man sends to a man, woman to woman, one present, one box or basket of two items. That's the mitzvah. That's all you have to do. Just send, pick one friend, send two items, and you fulfilled your mitzvah. That's it. You can walk home, v'zehu, you're done. That's all you have to do. So now the question becomes, once you fulfill the mitzvah, how far does one have to go for the hiddur mitzvah? Once you heard, shofar once, you don't have to hear it a second time. Once you shook the lulav one time, you don't have to shake it all day long. You can if you wanted to. But how far do we have to go? This is a question in general. How much do we weigh hiddur mitzvah and the stress that we go through? Is it worth the stress that we go through of performing mitzvahs multiple times? Now, I don't want to belittle by any means doing more mitzvahs and making them pretty. Those who are capable, have the wherewithal to make the Shalach Maros very pretty and connect the theme, that's a wonderful thing. I don't want to put that down, Chas V'Shalom. But there are some ladies who have, they feel the pressure, they feel the anxiety. All people feel some level of anxiety. If this is the area that you feel anxiety, you shouldn't necessarily push yourself. Just know what the mitzvah is and what's considered above and beyond. It's very important to know what's a mitzvah and what's a chumrah, what's extra. A lot of times people don't know how to draw the line. Is this a chumrah? Do I really have to do this? And that's why it's important to ask Shiloh sometimes of what you have to do and what you're able to do. What you have to do is only send one gift of two items to one person, and that's it. Now, of course, it gets complicated because you could insult people. You have friends that are going to be insulted if you don't send to them. And that all has to be worked around. And there are ways to discuss this to people and how to not insult individuals. But you have to know if it's really getting to you, if it's really stressful, just know what the mitzvah is. You could say, one this year, you could tell your friend, send a big message to them, this year I'm taking it easy. I'm just going to send to my cousin, my parents, and that's it. Don't get insulted. I'm focusing on my kids this year. How often do our kids get ignored on Shalach Maros and Purim? You get a little white paper bag and you put a couple of things in. I'm doing the fancy baskets with the fancy poems and stuff. So there are different mahalchim. I don't want to put anything down. I'm just saying different perspectives. One of the most important things of all Yiddishkeit is being mechanech our children, making them feel like they're relevant. The kids sense what's going on, that the mommies make these fancy things and the kids have their little paper bags. Sometimes that makes sense. Sometimes it might be cheaper and easier. But we don't want to forget about the children. So your hiddur mitzvah shouldn't override your children's involvement in the mitzvah. Now, sometimes the way you could involve your children is by sending them with the Shalach Maros to deliver the baskets. That's a way of involving them also, and tell them we're just sending family packages this year. Just make them feel connected. You don't want to ignore them, chas v'shalom. But realize what is the mitzvah and what's above and beyond. Now that's why, and it's not a plug, no one asked me to plug any Shalach Maros for the shul at all. But that's why sending Shalach Maros through the shul is a very good way to fulfill this mitzvah. Because even though multiple people are sending it together to multiple individuals, you can fulfill the mitzvah with partners. The poskim talk about this. It doesn't have to be only from me to an individual. You could send it from a group of people to multiple people and still fulfill the mitzvah. So that's a good way to get more checks, more mitzvahs, and still be able to have more time on your own and not be so stressed. So that's a wonderful thing to do as well. Now, also it's important to realize, because all of you feel the stress, what happens if you don't get Shalach Maros from one of your friends? Every year for 15 years, your friend's been sending you. This year, they forgot about you. How do you feel? Pretty sad. You feel forgotten about. So Rav Asher Weiss, a couple years ago, he was speaking to a number of Bunim here in the five towns. And it was a special, it was just closed discussion with around 30 Rabbanim. Rav Asher Weiss, those who don't know, is a massive Talmud Chacham and Tzaddik in Yerushalayim. He speaks all over the place. He has a beautiful English, a beautiful Hebrew. And he was giving chizik to Rabbanim. Rabbanim needs chizik just as well. And one of the first things he said to us was, don't be insulted who sends you Shalach Maros and who doesn't send you Shalach Maros. That was the example, he said. We all have this list in our head. We may not admit it. We know who sent us. We know who didn't. We know who showed up. We know who didn't show up to us. Everyone knows exactly who that is. But now if you realize from your perspective that you really don't want to send to anybody because you're just busy, you're stressed. So you have to understand and be down the cops list why some may not have sent to you. It wasn't malicious at all. But just try to put yourself in. You don't know what's going on in that person's life. Maybe they did forget about you. It wasn't on purpose. It just, life is busy. So that's very important to know. Just like you might forget someone, they might forget you also. And you can never be insulted who sent you or who didn't send you Shalach Maros. It's a good nisayon, it's a good test in Dan Lekaf Schus. Now, what has to be sent? One of the biggest misconceptions of all of Halacha is this very din, that you have to send Shalach Maros of two different brachas. I don't want to ask people to raise their hands here, but I'm willing to guess that most of you probably think, not to put you down, but most men as well think, that you have to have two different brachas. Mm-hmm. Now, that is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, misconception in all of Halacha. Now, a list, I could probably give a shiur, probably a great shiur topic of misconceptions in Halacha. So, another one I get pretty frequently. Is it true that you're allowed to use a pot if you haven't totaled it, but you could do it one time? One time use is allowed, right? One pass, right? One free pass. I get that often. Some of you think that still. You are not allowed to use a utensil if it has not been toveled. Not true at all. Another misconception is it true if I have glass, which I didn't have a chance to tovel, if I put a paper napkin over it, can I use it because it doesn't touch the glass? That is not true. You are not allowed to. If the glass is there, you can't put any separation. You must put it into the mikvah. So these are a few misconceptions that I don't want to make anyone feel bad. I'm sorry if I am, but you cannot use it if it's meant to be putting food on. Let me give you a different example just to make that clear as a side topic. Someone asked me just today, do you have to tovel the glass tray in a microwave? So the halach is you don't, because most people don't put food directly on it. If the nature of the utensil is not to put food on directly, then you don't need to do tvias kalim. Like a can opener. It touches the tuna fish sometimes, but it's not meant to touch the tuna fish. It's allowed to, but therefore it's not meant for food directly, so therefore you don't have to tovel that in the mikvah. But a glass candy dish is meant to hold food, so even if you're not putting food directly on it, but having a separation, it still needs a tefillah nonetheless. So these are a few misconceptions. So why do people think that Shalach Maros requires two different brachas? The reason is, I think, because you have to have two different types of foods, but not necessarily two types of brachos. So the example the Shulchan Aruch gives, what does he say? The Mechaber writes, Yosef Kara writes, you have to send shtei manos basar. Now, two types of meat. Meat is a shahakal, no matter what meat you're having, whether it's a chicken, cow, veal, it's all shahakal. You see, the example it gives is the same brachos. So how do you define two different manos, two different types of meat? So this is a good example to discuss borer as well. What's considered a mixture of two different types? To have a violation of borer, to separate something on Shabbos, you have to have a mixture of two different things. So the halacha is, let's say I have white meat and dark meat. So that's called two different types. It can come from the same exact chicken. I never knew what white meat and dark meat was until I got married. I always thought that I didn't like chicken at all because I was always given the white meat. It was always dry, never tasted good to me. I got married, my wife started making chicken more often, and she started giving me dark meat, which to me tastes much it's juicier, it's more tasty to me. So white meat and dark meat, it's considered two different types in Borer. So I can't separate between these two different things on Shabbos. And so too, for Shalach Maros, if I send someone a white piece of meat and a dark piece of meat, of chicken, I fulfilled the mitzvah. That is the definition of two manos when it comes to Shalach Maros. Sure.
Would Shalach Maros platter, anytime you get Shalach Maros or somebody comes to you for Shabbos and they give you a platter and there's already food on it, are you not allowed to eat that?
Right. So it's a very good question. When it comes to tevilas kalim, if I didn't tovel a kalim, it doesn't asher the food. The food is not prohibited. I can't use that dish. It's an isser on the usage of the dish, but not the food. So I'll just give you, since it came up, we'll go off topic a little bit. Let's say you're going to someone's house who you're concerned that maybe they didn't do tevilas kalim at all, or maybe they didn't do it properly. So what should one do? You're going there for Shabbos. You have no choice. It's a relative or something. So the halacha is that Rav Moshe writes, this is b'dieved, if you're stuck in a situation. Rav Moshe says you're allowed to use all those utensils, even if they weren't toveled, except for the cup and the bowl. Why? Because he says you don't really need a plate. In theory, I could eat on the table. So the plate just makes it look cleaner. It doesn't get as messy. So I could do away with the plate, I could do away with the forks and the knives, I could use my hands in theory. But the soup, you can't eat the soup without the bowl. You can't drink the water without the cup. So therefore he says you can't use the cup and you can't use the bowl. You have to be a little bit clever how to get around that. But the plate and everything else would be allowed to. But you see, the food doesn't become usser when it touches something that didn't go into the mikvah. It's just that you can't use those types of kalim. So in that situation, you get a dish. You shouldn't eat it off the dish. You should take it off the dish and then tell the kalim, but the food remains permitted. Other examples, just if you want for kids, I didn't look into this, but I would imagine two types of Laffy Taffys, for example, would be considered two types of minim. Even though they're the same bracha, they taste differently. Right, green tastes very different than the purple, and then the red, and all different colors and different flavors. So that would be similar to white meat and dark meat if you send two different Laffy Taffys. So that's the examples, yeah.
I grew up thinking you have to have three shalak manos, and I don't know why now.
Right.
But
maybe just grew up in a very friendly place. Right, but
there's no like specific number except for one.
Yeah, so now all you have to do is really give one, and then you fulfilled your mitzvah. Now, I don't want to chasram discouraged from giving more. I'm just saying know what the requirement is and know what's considered extra and to weigh what your time management is going to be like and your stress management. Now, it's also important to know, I'm giving examples of Laffy Taffys, but you have to send something that's chashuv. Now, how do you define what's considered chashuv, what's considered prestigious and significant? So it all depends on who is sending and who you're sending to. So I can't give you answers for that, but if you're sending to a Rebbe, a teacher in school or something, so oftentimes you send something nicer to them, not because they need it, but just you view them in a different way as opposed to a friend might be something different. So just to fulfill the mitzvah, at least for one, you know, in our house, I think I don't know what we do exactly, but we send probably just like a Weinberger and maybe one other person, just like a nice basket, and we don't send to anybody else. Everyone comes to our house and we give out popcorn and cotton candy, whatever they have. So I don't know if we really fulfill the mitzvah, maybe for the kids, for the cotton candy, the popcorn, we probably get additional mitzvahs. But in order to really fulfill the mitzvah, it has to be something that is considered on that social standard of what you and the recipient is comfortable with. Now, also that food has to be edible. To be considered, to be yotzei the mitzvah, it has to be edible. I know people sometimes are very creative with their themes. Now, sometimes that themes can really backfire. Because let's say you're doing a whole, I don't know, Starbucks theme. So you want to put all different flavored coffees in and stuff. And you put some coffee flavored and coffee. I don't drink coffee. I don't even know anything about coffee. Someone actually just today WhatsApped me from the airplane itself, from the airplane. So I sent him a voice note. He says, I don't get voice notes on the airplane. I don't know how it works. But so I was texting him on the airplane. He wanted to know they served him black coffee in some type of porcelain cup. Is he allowed to drink it? So I don't know anything about coffee at all. How could you trust that the coffee is even kosher in the first place? Don't they use other coffee on the plane? He said, no, they only use black coffee. So I asked someone who knows coffee, and he said, no, it's known that on the planes, all they use is black coffee. No flavored at all. You're allowed to accept the practice. You could drink black coffee on the plane. But there's a concern that maybe that cup was used for something else, since the kitchen is so small in the back there, that maybe some, I don't know, pig got into the cup. Best not to use that cup, but use a plastic or a styrofoam cup instead. So let's say you have this whole Starbucks theme. Fine. So you have, I don't know what kind of flavors they have, but I imagine they have different types of French vanilla and, I don't know, triple chocolate. No, I'm making these up, probably. Okay, so you have different types of beans. So now you have 15 types. And the problem is, you haven't been yotzei the mitzvah, because you have to send something that's edible. Coffee is not in an edible state, unless you send like a coffee that's like, an iced coffee, like that, which is drinkable in this current state, you're not yotzei. The mitzvah has to be something that's edible. So as long as there's two items there that are edible, so then you can throw in all the inedible stuff that you want. But it has to be at least two items that are edible. Other items that won't qualify are spices. Spices are not considered food. They enhance the food. Whatever theme you might have. You might have a Moroccan theme. I don't know. So you put some Moroccan spices in or something. So that's not going to fulfill the mitzvah. It's very nice. I'm sure they'll appreciate the cumin and whatever else you're sending with them. But it's not going to qualify for the types that you need. What about condiments, ketchup, mustard, mayonnaise? That also doesn't qualify. That's not considered food itself. They enhance the food, but they are not food itself. Or dressing. You send some lettuce and dressing. So the lettuce works. But the Italian dressing you send along is not going to work as one of the items necessary. Shulchan Aruch writes that you also can send drinks. Drinks work as well. Now, the drink has to be also chashuv. So wine certainly qualifies. Water definitely does not qualify as something chashuv. What about seltzer? You think seltzer works? So flavored seltzer, does that work? So the post can write that seltzer doesn't work either. It's not considered chashuv enough. It's water. He says it's water with some gas in it. That's all. In fact, it's very very relevant for Shabbos. I get this question pretty often. Can you make seltzer stream? That what's it called, right? Soda stream? That soda stream? Can you make that on Shabbos? And it's already, people think soda stream and seltzer is like a new thing in the 20th or 21st century now. It's not true. They had this a couple hundred years ago already. And the Chassam Sofer Paskin, that you are allowed to make seltzer on Shabbos, as long as there's no electricity. I don't know how SodaStream works. I was told there's no electricity involved. You just kind of open it up and it goes in. That's not called makeh b'patish. It's not called fixing something. It's water. Now it's water with gas, with bubbles. It's no different. And therefore, you are allowed to make SodaStream on Shabbos. So for that reason, also, when it comes to Shalach Manos, seltzer has the same exact status as water, which means it doesn't qualify for one of the manos of Shalach Manos. You have to have something else instead. Now, it's important also as you go shopping. You know, one of the restrictions I put on the halacha chat is no asking questions on hashgachos. Now, that's for two reasons. One reason is because it could get political. What I say is right, what's not. Also, I don't know all the answers. Most of the stuff for the hashgachos are found on the CRC website, those who want to know. And thirdly, I didn't want women going down Trader Joe's and taking pictures every single thing. What is this? What is this? What is this? What is this? So for those reasons, I said no hashgachos. But when going shopping for Shalach Manos, especially when you're being creative, be careful to check the hashgacha. Make sure it's a good hashgacha. Sometimes there are interesting hashgachos which are not necessarily reliable. That's something you should be aware of. Rabbi Leibowitz just told me the other day, or Rabbi Leibowitz from North Woodmere told me that one year that the sister had found this very cheap wine to buy. Mamacher Metzia. And afterwards they found out that it was actually from the Shemitah year. So that poses problem because you can't just, if you don't want to drink it, you can't just spill the wine out from Shemitah down the drain. You have to drink it up. So you have to educate the whole shul how to deal with Shemitah wine. So when you're buying things, be careful what you're buying exactly. That certainly it's kosher, it's reliable. And also be sensitive. This is not the biggest deal in the world, but let's say Chalv Yisrael. If you're sending someone who doesn't keep, who keeps Chalv Yisrael and you don't, that's just a sensitivity. Now, no one gets insulted. If you send it to them, there is a question. Let's say I send an item to you that you won't eat, that is either unhealthy for you, you're allergic to it, or for your standards it doesn't qualify. The post can say you do get the mitzvah nonetheless, but that's just a different sensitivity to be aware of sending to people to make sure that they rely on the hashgacha that you're sending. Okay, so I think it wraps up for the most part the idea of Shalach Manos. Now, in addition to Shalach Manos, the Ramah writes that just like women are chayiv in Shalach Manos, they're also chayiv in Matanos Levyonim, sending out money to the Aniyim, which has to be to two different Evyonim to send money to Tzedakah to Evyonim. And women don't necessarily know this, but the Rambam puts more emphasis on Matanos Levyonim than Shalach Manos. That means if you're spending X amount of dollars on Shalach Manos, seemingly you should spend more than that on Matanos Levyonim. We put so much time and effort into Shalach Manos, which is very nice, making our friends feel good. But we don't put so much time in making the Avyonim, the ones who really, really need, feel good as well. And that's more important, says the Rambam, than Shalach Manos. And women are just as obligated as men. So now those who are married, so then you could send it along with your husband as a group, as a family. That certainly does work. Now, as an important point, I keep getting questions in Hilchos Maaser. When it comes to Maaser Ksafim, how to use Maaser Ksafim? Last night I got an email from a sixth grade girl who asked me this question. She wanted to know, they're having in their school a Chinese auction. But the Chinese auction is for all the trips and the graduation, the yearbook. It wasn't really for tzedakah at all. Mm-hmm. So she wanted to know if she could use her Maaser and the money she made to help support this Chinese auction. The answer, of course, was no. Even though it's a Chinese auction, we usually affiliate that with the tzedakah. This wasn't a tzedakah, just to help them go to Washington, D.C. or something. I don't know where they're going. So hilchot tzedakah is very important for women as well. So there's halacha when it comes to tzedakah, that women, according to the halacha, masha kana isha kana baila. Whatever a woman acquires, it really goes right to her husband. It goes right into his pocket. So that means, let's say an ani comes to your door. So the women have no right to give that money away. It's not theirs. It's her husband's. She has no right to give the money away. That's the halacha. But the poskim say if women know what's going on with the finances, if they're you know they're doing the accounting for the house, or they have the right to use a credit card as they please, so then women would be allowed to give tzedakah as well. But tzedakah and matan tzedakah v'yonim are just as relevant to women as they are for men, and one should give very generously, more than the money being spent on shalach manos. Now, on top of that, I'll add that the children as well have to know what's going on. Growing up, we all knew about the Sudas Purim. We had a Suda of some sort, maybe not as exciting growing up as we have it now, but we all knew there was some Suda. And we all knew about Kriyas and Megillah. We went to hear the Megillah being laid. And we knew about Shalach Manos, Suda, and Megillah. But what we didn't really know much about is Matanos Levionim. How many people here, don't show your hands, but how many of us saw our parents write a check to give it to Matanos Levionim, or to Tzedakah in general? Most of us probably didn't see our parents, even though they may have been giving. You know, when people give Tzedakah, they like to be very tanua. They don't want to tell their kids how much money they're giving. It's a strange thing. They don't tell the kids how much money they have in the bank. You don't show your bank statements. You don't show your pay stubs to your children. But still, when it comes to Matanos Levionim and Tzedakah, I think there is an element of Tzedakah that the kids should see, that you are giving Tzedakah. And I would say even to see how much you're giving as well. When you're showing your, just like when children, and I remember when I was younger, maybe like fourth, fifth grade, I got a good mark on a test, whatever that test was. And a friend of mine said to me, "Did you tell your parents?" I said, "No, I didn't tell my parents." I said, "Why didn't you tell your parents?" I said, "I don't know. The teacher gave me the test back." He said, "No, you have to tell your parents when you get a good grade because they get nachas from you." So just like you know, as children, parents get nachas from their children, children also get nachas from the parents. And children can learn tremendously from their parents. So it might be uncomfortable if you haven't done this just yet, but imagine sitting your kids down and saying, "I'm writing a check for whatever it is, $100, $180, $1,800, whatever you're giving. Show your children that I'm giving tzedakah." You don't have to tell anybody else. You could give it anonymously, you don't have to put your name on anything, but your kids to know and to be in almost on like that tzedakah, that matanos levionim, that's a very tremendous lesson in chinuch. Tremendous.
11.
Yes.
Sorry, another question. So a lot of yeshivas collect money also. The boys go around collecting for the yeshiva. Does that qualify as avionim?
No.
Where does the boys go around?
Yeah.
And it does. Giving tzedakah, but that's not really
the
mitzvah.
Then. Right. Correct. No, it's a nice. There is a halacha on Purim. Normally, when you give tzedakah, you have to know who's receiving. Oftentimes, you have people coming to ask for money in shul. We don't know who they are. So you give them a dollar. It used to be a quarter. Now it's a dollar. So everyone gives a dollar out now. And so you give something, but we don't want to give people large sums of money. We don't know if they're really true or faking it. We had a couple weeks ago, there was this guy in the hallway, a long beard, and we were having a bris, and Pesach Kron is with the mole. And then during davening, he has this driver, comes up to me and Rav Weinberger, he says, "The guy in the hallway isn't Jewish, collecting money." So, he's not Jewish, he's a beard. He said, "Yeah, he's not Jewish." Rav Pesach Kron said he's not Jewish. He was a fraud. And someone the next day said they caught a picture of him in the Young Israel davening with tefillin on and singing Angel Moishi songs with a tefillin on. So we have frauds like that. You don't know if they're telling the truth or not. So this guy was faking to be Jewish. Other people really are Jewish and they're faking to be anim. So you don't really know. So on a regular day, we're very careful who we give money to. But on Purim, the halacha is kol poshet yad. Anyone who sticks out their hand, you have to give them. It's a very good question. I grew up in Teaneck. In Teaneck, the way it works is, I think in the Five Towns as well, but I don't know how, the system doesn't seem to be working as well as it does in Teaneck, but there's a vat of tzedakah, where people are on this team, the research team, where they look into each individual, where you need to get a certificate signed by whoever's in charge of the vat, that this person is worthy of receiving money, and he walks around with that certificate. So in Bnei Ashurin and other places in Teaneck, they don't let them inside the building even, but I think they stand outside. If they have a certificate from the RCBC, whatever it is there, then you would give them. If they don't have that, no one would give them money. You have to go through a process.
Can I guess, like, an organization or something like that?
No. If an organization that you trust, you certainly can give. Then you trust them. That you would be allowed to as well. Or if you give to the Rav also knows certain people in the community who would need. You reminded me before, I wanted to mention earlier about all the stress that, of shalach manos, of staying home, of going out or splitting up. One place I will never go on Purim is to Farakway. We've never been to Farakway. That place, the streets are so skinny, hard to get by. The limousines, the bachim collecting. I love the place, but I will never go there on Purim.
Yeah, but the
Moras
are there.
Yeah, sure. I don't think we ever take them to the Moras. Yes.
Just to be clear for everybody, I think there is a minimum number that qualifies as matanos la'avyonim. Like you have to pay for a seuda for a person to eat.
This is correct, yes.
So it has to be, I don't know, but maybe you don't know, how much is the minimum amount for a...
Great question. I don't know the answer. It's true. Just like shalach manos has to be a amount of money that's considered chashiva, matanos la'avyonim also has to be significant to pay for a seuda, for a meal for them. I didn't look into this. My guess would be, I think $20 would certainly cover a meal. $10 probably would as well. So I don't remember what the shiurim are, but you are right. You are correct in that. Now I'm going to finish off a little bit here with the challenge for each one of you here. You up for a challenge?
Sure. Sorry, I'm just like...
So many of us, you know, we like to send to our friends. Those who we speak to often and get along with. How many of us send to someone who we don't necessarily get along with? Not enemies. That would be a big thing to send to someone who you don't get along with. But someone who you don't know well, or someone who moved into the community recently, someone who you're trying to make feel part of the kila, more part of the community. The Rambam writes, there's halacha. Let's say you see two animals. There's a halacha of helping load an animal and helping unload an animal. And let's say you have the option of loading and unloading an animal. One is one guy's putting the packages on the back of the donkey, the other one's taking off. So typically the halacha is you help the animal to remove the packages because you're preventing the pain as opposed to the one who's loading the donkey. But let's say the Rambam says you see that your good friend is busy unloading the animal and there's a enemy of yours who's busy loading the animal. So which should you do? So you would think, probably, help the animal, your friend, and unload the animal to remove the tsar balei chayim. The Rambam says, you go help the sone, the one you don't get along with. Because tikkun amidos, fixing your midos, getting along with people, even though you're loading up the packages on the animal, getting along with someone you don't get along with normally is more important than helping that animal. So the challenge to you is to try to find someone. Give to all your friends, your family. Find someone new in the community who you could send to. Make them feel a part of it. Make them feel part of this kehila or the community. And one of the things that's very relevant when it comes to Purim is the Gemara tells us that when Haman was speaking Lashon Hara about Klal Yisrael, so he says that they're Yeshna Am Mefura, they're an Am that's dispersed, in Mefuzar. And the Gemara says, Yeshna Am means Yeshno min Hamitzos. Yeshno, they explain the same letters as Shena, sleeping, same word as Shena. They're sleeping, they weren't performing mitzvahs. Now, they were performing mitzvahs, but they weren't doing with excitement, with enthusiasm. They were falling asleep. And there are many, many proofs for this concept. And the Pasuk tells us in Megillas Esther that Nadadah Shnas HaMelech literally means that the king was waking up from his shnas, from his sleep. And the Vilna Gaon tells us that any time the word HaMelech is used throughout Megillas Esther, if it doesn't say Achashverosh, it just says HaMelech, that's a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what was going on during Purim, the dark times of Purim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kivyachol was sleeping. We were sleeping from mitzvahs, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was sleeping from mitzvahs, and slowly, Nadadah Shnas HaMelech, the king, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was waking up from his slumber. We were waking up from our slumber. We were waking up from this sleep. When you send gifts to people, they feel a certain energy. You feel good about yourself. They feel good about themselves. You wake them up. You wake yourself up when you give a gift. You know, oftentimes, when we give gifts, let's be honest, we're trying to gain something out of this. When we do something nice, oftentimes, we think, what am I going to gain out of this? What type of relationship, friendship will I get out of this? What kind of respect, honor will I get from this? Very rare do we do a mitzvah because we really want to help someone do a mitzvah. We're looking for what we could get from this. There's a story someone sent me just last week, maybe 2 weeks ago he sent it to me. Great tzaddik, his name was Rav Kapel. Rav Kapel was a tremendous Baal Tzedakah. and he was traveling, and he was known that whenever he saw an Evyon, an Ani on the street, he would invite him to take a ride and take him to his destination. And he one time, he saw an Ani was walking along the road and stopped and invited him inside to take him where he wanted to go to. And the Ani refused to go in. And Rav Kapel insisted, please come in. They went back and forth, and the Ani says, why are you so insistent? I don't want to come in. Rav Kapel says, the Pasuk says, Nason titain, to give and give, to repeat, to try really hard. And even when the Ani refuses, try even harder. Nason titain. So the Ani says, but you're only doing this because you want to get schar, because you want to get olam haba. You don't really care about me, says the Ani. Rav Kapel says, I'll tell you what. All the olam haba I'm going to get from this mitzvah, it's going to go right to you. Let's shake on it. They shook hands. The Ani jumped into the wagon and went for the ride. The Ani says to Rav Kapel, I need to tell you something very, very powerful. Up in Shemayim right now, you know what was going on? They said it's time for Rav Kapel's neshama to come up to Shemayim. Your time was up. And the Malachim came up in Shemayim and the Malachim were saying, Rav Kapel, tzedakah matzabi mavis. Tzedakah protects a person from death. He was the biggest baal tzedakah in the community. How could you take his life away? And the other Malachim says, but he doesn't do l'shem Shemayim. He does this for Olam Haba. He doesn't really mean it. He doesn't really care about the Aniyim. So they said, let's test him out. Let's see. So they sent the Malachim mavis down here. Says the Ani, I'm the Malachim Avis. I came to test you. And because you passed this test, you're going to be zochet to live another 25 years to go see your youngest daughter get married and have a grandchild and see his wedding, who ended up being the Choza Milublin because of this tremendous maisa that he did. He gave it because he wanted to give it. He didn't care about the schar. He didn't care about the Olam Haba at all. So we're waking up the sleep, the slumber of the king, the slumber of ourselves. Make those connections with people who you don't necessarily get along with, or those who you haven't yet befriended. There's a mice I shared a few months ago in the shul, and I'll finish with this. There was a frum chaplain in Eretz Yisrael in Yerushalayim who went to the chief of the police department in Yerushalayim. And he was visiting in that room, in that office, and he noticed the chief of the police department wasn't religious. And when the rabbi, the chaplain, walked in, he noticed that there's a family of a Haredi family on the wall of the chief, the secular chief police officer in Yerushalayim. So naturally, the chaplain asked him, who is that family on the wall? Why do you have a picture of a Haredi family? So the chief smiled and says, let me tell you a story. Many years ago, 20 years ago or something, I was working, starting off in the police department here in Yerushalayim. And there are all these Afghanas going on, these protests, the crazy Haredim on Shabbos. And it was a crazy week. It was one of those very hot weeks in the summer in Eretz Yisrael. And I was ready to go home Friday, to go home to relax, my day off on Saturday, Shabbos. And right before I left, the chief at the time says to me, you need to come in tomorrow. They're planning, those crazy hooligans are planning a big, big protest yet again. We need extra staff. You need to come in tomorrow. And he says, but I work so hard, it was so hot, I need my rest. He says, you have no choice, you need to come in tomorrow. So he says, I went home, I was so upset, my blood was boiling. And I went to sleep that night, so angry at these Haredim. And the next morning I woke up, and I didn't get to sleep late like I would normally on a regular Saturday Shabbos. I woke up early, I got suited up in my police uniform, and I got my baton out, hitting into my fist, thinking whichever Haredi crosses that line, they're going to pay for it. So he shows up to this big protest, and there's a line. And he says, if any of you Haredim cross over this line, I'm going to hit you so hard. And they're pushing and screaming, and no one crosses, they're close. No one crosses the line. Suddenly, an old lady begins to walk towards him. He sees her walking towards him. He says, Giveret Tafsiki, stop, don't come closer. And she's walking closer and closer. And he says, stop walking, Tafsiki, Giveret, I tell you, I'm going to hurt you, don't come closer. And she walks closer. And she steps over the line, and they're cheering her on. All the time, cheering her on. Go, 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 go. And she stands right up to him. And the individual, the young police officer, lifts up his baton. And she says in a very soft voice, she finally opened up her mouth, and she said, you could do what you want. You could hit me. But it looks very hot out there. You're sweating. And she takes out a bottle of water. And she hands it to him. And he wasn't sure how to react, whether he should laugh, cry. But he went home that day. He went to his six-year-old daughter and said to her, I know you always ask me if you could play with the Haredim in the community. If they could produce a woman like this, you could play with them. And one thing that led to the next, and she started playing with the neighbors, and she wanted to go to school, so I sent her to the school. And although it was too late for me, says the police officer, this is her family on the wall. A little bottle of water to someone who doesn't like you, who you don't get along with, could change the world. So Mirza Hashem, we shall be zocha to not only fulfill the mitzvahs of Shalach Manos with the greatest hiddur and the greatest beauty, but to build relationships and friendships here in the Kehillah.